The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800.
Now, do you believe people who practice BDSM, that they are psychologically disturbed? That's what a lot of people think. Well, we'll try to answer that question with our alternative sexuality panel, our BDSM panel. Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle join me tonight. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you again
to answer our listeners' questions. And this is a, you know, this is an area that requires a lot of discussion simply because it's not understood by everybody. Even though we see more and more of it in the mainstream, we want to be able to at least get some notion from real people who really practice all of this, so that we have, you know, not just the fantasy.
Quite a lot of people do practice
it
as well.
I know.
And that's, a lot of people are surprised, you know, to know that they're, if their neighbor or the, you know, the person they work with all day.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that you can just, at least for the vast majority of BDSM or kink practitioners, it's not something that you would be identifiable outside of the happening.
That's right. Nobody knows what goes on in the bedrooms.
Exactly. But people, you know, like to think that they'd be able to pick them out and you know, but it's like we don't walk around with a sneak on our head. It's not a Charlie Manson thing we can look and, you know, yeah, okay, that guy's not right.
Right.
You know. It's
you're much further than I am. I'm still wondering. I hope you won't prove that we're psychologically.
Don't worry.
Well, we might not be the very best example for that, but
no, I think you're a good example of not disturbed.
Oh well, thank you.
Yes. Otherwise, I'm not sure.
I'll take
that
as a compliment. You've known us for a few years.
I've known you for a few years. I am a psychologist. I can assess that. That's you know right. quite well, and I don't think I would have invited you back if I didn't think you were stable individuals.
Okay. Unless you are.
Unless I'm unstable. But what one thing I wanted to start the show off is talk about the DSM. It's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's the psychiatric manual that we use, even as psychologists, to diagnose certain problems. And sexual sadism is actually in there, but I want to read out what it actually is so that we could talk about what BDSM is not. Okay.
Excellent.
So sexual sadism involves acts, real, not simulated, in which the individual derives sexual excitement from the psychological or physical suffering, including humiliation, of the victim. In order to officially be diagnosed with sexual sadism, individuals must meet the following criteria. And there are two. Over a period of at least 6 months, recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, sexual urges, or behaviors involving acts, real, not simulated, in which the psychological or physical suffering of the victim is sexually exciting to the person. And two, that the person has acted on these sexual urges, and this is the important part, with a non-consenting person.
Well, phew.
Okay. Or the sexual urges, or the sexual urges or fantasies cause a marked distress or interpersonal difficulty. So if a person, like these were the people that I would see in my practice, which were not comfortable with these urges or were not comfortable having these desires.
Well, I personally think anybody who does the non-consensual thing is disturbed, period.
Well, that's where it becomes the cycle.
That's the
where
thing.
It becomes a psychiatric diagnosis of sexual sadism when there's a victim. Okay?
Exactly. Because I enjoy sexual sadism. However, only with a consenting person. It'd be like a cold shower if it wasn't.
Right.
Now, I'm still doing the act. I can see they're upset. But I also know that if it gets bad, they can stop it. They can tell me, they can give me a signal. We can stop it. This is someone who, it's very hard for people to understand because a lot of people on the so the bottom side or because I don't like the words the victim side, but the bottom,
the submissive
or the submissive.
Side.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't get that word, but
you of all people.
But they won't necessarily enjoy it while it's happening. They enjoy not enjoying it. I know that's very hard
that's interesting
to explain. But now later, when they think about it, it's fantastic. and it's all the stuff of fantasies. But when it's actually happening, it's not necessarily totally enjoyable.
Okay. So they enjoy not enjoying is what
yes,
you're saying.
Yes.
Well, that's like enjoying some level of pain. You right, may not yes, enjoy the pain, but when you think of it, maybe there's some level
well,
of
well, you
enjoyment,
might not really enjoy hiking up a mountain, but it was great to look at the pictures and think about it after.
Oh, that's a good analogy,
you know, so,
actually.
So hiking up the mountain is a lot of work, and it was hard, and you're tired, but, you know.
Right.
When you get up there, it was all worth it.
And you would do it again.
Absolutely.
Right.
You mentioned something about being comfortable with what you do, and I think this is a key word. If you're submissive and you're not comfortable with what you're doing, maybe you should sit down and talk more with your partner. If you're a dominant and you're not comfortable with what you're doing, same deal. But if you're comfortable and you have thought about this and you have negotiated with your partner, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's like you said.
If anything causes you distress, that's the sign. So something that causes distress is something that may not be emotionally healthy for you.
Exactly. And it may be something that's even distressing during the time, especially if you do humiliation play. Which you have to be very careful. You really have to talk to the person about it. Because some persons, it actually like energizes.
Mm-hmm.
They actually get more confident with it. They'll enjoy it. They find it exciting after.
Being humiliated. Which is a hard concept to wrap your head around. Because when you think
really
about
is.
It, it's such a negative emotion in real life. Like somebody humiliates you in public, for example. It's not a very good feeling.
It's not the same thing here.
It's very specific. And it's very specific to each person. For one person, it may be walking across the room with your pants at your ankles.
Mm-hmm.
It could be for someone else, it could be being spanked in front of another person. I'm talking like an BDSM environment where it's all, cool.
Consensual.
And consensual, yes. But it's a little bit is that naughty feeling, which is kind of exciting and taboo and fun. So that's kind of a lot of fun for a lot of people. But it has to do with if you can cross it okay with your integrity and your personal morals. You know, I personally find nothing wrong with it if you've got consenting adults doing what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that I would never do, but if consenting adults want to do, that's fantastic.
If they want exactly.
Whatever.
Good for them. You're not judging them. Pierre and Catherine are my guests. This is our alternative sexuality night. So we're talking about kinky behavior. We're talking about BDSM. And anything else in that realm that you want to talk about. So if you want to know if something is kinky or if you are distressed by something or your partner's talking to you about doing something and you're not sure about it, maybe we can help you out tonight. 514-800 to text in. If you want to call in, it's 514-790-0800. But that question gets asked a lot, are people who practice it psychologically disturbed? Because for a lot of folks, like listening to it and hearing those kinds of descriptions of it, they couldn't possibly imagine themselves in that situation, let's just say. And so they imagine that if they can't imagine themselves, then people who do must be disturbed.
Exactly.
Right? And that's what we're getting at. Here's a question for you. It's like any sexual orientation. If you don't feel comfortable, you do have to discuss it with your partner. You are absolutely right.
Definitely.
So, and I think you've said it before too, that BDSM for some people feels like a sexual orientation. You are oriented towards that kind of behavior. It's not, you don't necessarily understand it. You just know that this turns
wired.
You on without knowing why this particular act turns you on. Same with a lot of fetishes, a lot of people who have, why am I so attracted to feet? Why does this arouse me? Why does that arouse me? And that is the complexity of sexuality in general, of just the psyche and of sexuality and the huge range of that. So we're talking about whether people who practice BDSM, are they psychologically disturbed? I'm going to share with you coming up a study That shows quite the opposite, in fact. And you'll let me know what you think as well. Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com are here with me, as they are every month, discussing many issues surrounding alternative sexuality.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now, 514-790-0800. Passion. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight, it's Alternative Sexuality with Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com. So we talk about kink, we talk about BDSM, and we talk about fetishes, all things that are considered more alternative. I don't want to say we used to call it marginalized. We used to call it marginal sexuality or marginalized, but we don't use that term anymore. We really talk about it as alternative because it's still all part of a large norm, I think.
Exactly.
Right? And especially when you look at the studies and the numbers of people who are actually practitioners and the number of people who are actually interested in it, it becomes more of a norm. And as people feel more and more comfortable expressing their alternative, non-vanilla desires, we're seeing actually how large the community, that people are who have quite a variety
of sexual interests. I suspected for years it was,
I'm sure.
But you know what? It's great to see the studies. And it's because people are now actually answering.
Right. They feel more comfortable answering. But that's also the internet. The internet has done a lot for that. Like, you know, I've said in the past, like I used to, as a therapist specializing in sexuality, my practice used to be full of people with fetishes and alternative sexual practices that didn't know if they were normal, that were asking, is this, am I normal?
Is it
what do
only
I do?
Me?
Is it just me? Why is this happening to me? Why do I like, why am I so turned on by feet,
am
for
I crazy?
Example? Right. Am I crazy? Et cetera, et cetera. And I don't see them anymore. Like, unless they're truly distressed by it, but that's kind of rare to this day still. But so because they found online community. So once that happened, they no longer felt alone. They no longer felt abnormal. They no longer felt judged.
And they can find a partner who's actually interested in this instead of, you know, the regular girlfriend going, what are you looking at my feet for? Someone goes, oh, yeah, check my feet out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're going to be a lot more comfortable with it if they find a partner that's also, it's their matching sexuality.
But we also need to understand that our partners, even in vanilla, let's say vanilla non-BDSM relationships, we may have preferences and we may need the language to express those preferences to our partners. And often people don't because of the fear of being judged or considered disturbed or something. So people, and I've seen this in couples where they will be married for decades and they will not have shared their preference, their, you know, and it may get discovered by a partner looking online and saying, what are you looking at those kinds of websites for? And
well, remember, you know, sexuality not that long ago was a dirty word.
Well, yes, but you know, again,
not that long ago,
you're right. Yeah. But I mean, I've been practicing for about 30 years now, so I've seen certainly
which
seen
is hard to believe when you look at
it. Oh, thank you. But I've certainly seen trends and you know, different ways of expression and all of that today. But here's an interesting text. Hi, Lori. I would be curious to know if your guests are familiar with a foot fetish beginning in childhood with their clients and if they could please explain. And that's from Scott from Regina. So are foot fetishists often into BDSM in your or do you see a lot of BDSMers who are into feet?
It's actually under kind of the umbrella usually of BDSM.
Okay.
Because it's often it's often very submissive. So often if it's like with a mistress, she'll be like in a throne type thing. And then there's often a partial of it that is foot care. So basically she gets a pedicure and
so the submissive would take care of the mistress's feet.
Yes, but it tends to be kind of, you know, if it's done at home or a home dungeon, you know, it tends to be so that they're kneeling before them and stuff. So it tends to kind of like fall into one another,
so
like they're servicing.
Okay.
Yes. They often, what a lot of people don't understand is 95% of BDSM practitioners don't do S&M. Or it's a very, very mild form.
Okay.
You know, so that would definitely be considered in the BDSM
world. But world. I have to say I've met plenty of foot fetishes, and it's the most common fetish out there.
Okay.
That do not practice BDSM.
Yep.
But that enjoy, well, maybe, okay, I'll take that back, because if I think back of some of the things they would like to have done by the partner's feet, like, you know, step on me with your feet, things like that, that would probably fall into the realm of BDSM.
And serve the, because of the servicing thing, they're, where they're like, doing like care for the mistress or the person. Mm-hmm. Now there's some that their fetish doesn't include that, so that might be a little less BDSM. But often it goes over, and it's very, very common, and there's lots of women who absolutely love that.
But yet we have met other people who were dominant, and they would put their female submissive and bondage so they can play with their feet.
So dominants who like the feet
so
also.
So dominant could
sure.
be...
That's true. That's
remember
true.
We...
Right. Yes, a few actually.
Okay. But again, just going back to foot fetishes, I've known, you know, several foot fetishists who all describe a very similar story. And they were aware of this interest in feet in early in their childhood.
Yeah.
I remember one story where he... And it's interesting, I haven't met any women who have the same type of sexual arousal by feet at all, actually. I don't think I've ever met one woman. But I've met plenty of men who will say that it started with when they were little, they would be, you know, their parents would have friends over, they'd be barefoot or in their stocking feet or what have you, they'd be crawling around or they'd be on the floor, so they'd be close to the feet, and then somehow it got paired somewhere along the way. But it's... We don't know enough. Like, we still don't have an idea.
Fetishes. We know quite a few over the years, and I have never, ever met one that it's not from when they were a child and crawling around.
Right. So there is a link, but we don't know how in the brain that all gets paired with arousal. We know that there's something either that is comforting about the nylons or... pretty feet or
stilettos are basically
they're a sexual object.
They're very, you know, it's kind of like universally accepted that that's
a sexy thing. Right.
So I mean, I think sometimes it comes from the boots and then the foot goes after almost.
Right.
But you mentioned about fetishes with men. It seems the fetishes is something that more men have than women.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be interesting to know why.
There are women foot fetishes.
But that
I know women who are shoe fetishes. But
well,
they're all shoes.
They're actually male foot fetish.
I think I'm one of them.
And it has to do with insertion, basically, of the foot. And that is
I've never heard of that.
Well, I've talked with people.
Okay. Well, I'm asking you. You're the expert here.
You know, the big and some toes, I guess, that, you know.
Insertion in the vagina of the foot.
Yes. And that is a...
So that's an interesting
actually,
fetish.
There's a lot of video of this on the net.
It's actually not that...
Uncommon.
I mean, it's not really common, but no, there's a whole porn fetish
genre.
For that.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing is you'll find in the porn world, you'll find everything.
Yeah.
If you're interested in it, it's there.
They insert the foot and the vagina, or they insert the foot and the mouth of the submissive.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kind of...
Yeah.
Just to prove what you're saying.
Again, you know, sometimes not well understood, but rather common, actually. And probably if people stop to think, they might have some degree of a foot fetish, even if they don't identify as a foot fetishist, meaning they like to see their partner in high heels or they like to see them in high boots, or these are things that will turn them on, even if it isn't such a strong fetish.
But I think it would be important maybe after the break that you explain to people what is a fetish and when it is good and when it is not.
Well, there's a difference between, and I can talk about that right now, actually, that the, you know, somebody who has a preference for something versus somebody who has a need for something. So if every sexual encounter needs to include the foot or a shoe or what have you, it could become problematic.
It's a problem.
In the relationship you have. Depends on the relationship you have. I've seen it work, you know, with a partner who's understanding and willing, a willing partner. But I've also seen it backfire where the person could not engage in sexuality without having something to do with the foot fetish. So, and that might disturb the other person, right? The
yes.
other person may feel, well, you just like my feet. You don't want me, you know,
sure.
as if the foot is its own thing, you know, separate from the body and separate from wanting, feeling wanted
no,
as a
sure.
human being. It's just the foot that's wanted.
But on the other hand, if somebody can control their urge and just add it to their sexuality, could be something interesting. Like I always say, you have to control your fetish and not let your fetish control you.
Well, but that's where, so I see them, individuals, when their fetish controls them.
Yeah.
And that's when they end up in my office because they don't want to be controlled by a fetish, by uncontrollable urges or compulsive acts or things that may get them in trouble or things that may harm their relationship. And so they end up seeking therapy to be able to have a better understanding, have a better control over their emotions, looking at what is it that leads them to this compulsive behavior, etc. And that's when it becomes a problem. So when we talk about the disturbance, are people disturbed? It's only in those situations, like they have to meet those particular criteria. But the majority of foot fetishes and the majority of people who practice BDSM are not disturbed. You know, they have
exactly.
to fit those criteria. So that I think we have to, it's good that we made that distinction. But I still want to share with you a study that was published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine, a good study that I will, I'll share the results of that study and it'll explain it a little bit better.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
From the pleasure to the pain and everything in between. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight it's alternative sexuality. We talk about fetishes, BDSM, etc. 514-800 if you have any thoughts you want to share with us or questions. So this text writes, girls crawl on the floor as well and are also exposed to feet. So why is it that they don't equally develop a foot fetish as most males seem to?
That's the thing about fetish for men or and not for women. It's
well,
kind of weird.
Male yeah. shoes aren't... considered a sexual object, like a high heel would be,
right,
or
but,
high
but
boots and things.
I understand, yes, and maybe the child exposed to that then makes the association with high heels later on or
but
something
the baby will
like
not
that.
Understand what this means. I mean, what something is sexy or not. They don't get it.
It's again, you know, we're talking about like children crawling and why does one develop, why does one get paired with arousal whereas the other one does not get paired with arousal. And what we know is that fetishes exist mostly in men, not in women
yeah.
in the same way. Whereas you can yeah. see women who are into BDSM for sure, probably equally as men. But no, you would think less, women less so?
A little bit.
Okay. But certainly fetishes, I have not, maybe it's more hidden, maybe it's something that isn't discussed at all, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. And I'm not sure why.
Is it from education? Is it from, I don't know.
Well, if you grew up female, sex is a lot easier to obtain.
That's true.
For a female than mm-hmm. a male. It's not a level playing
oh.
field.
Yeah, but
the
what does
female,
that have to do with the object of desire?
Because if a woman, how can I say, if a woman wants it, she can go out and get it.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the same with a man.
I understand. But
and I'm
it
wondering
doesn't...
if, you know, a frustration level of society, it makes it different. That they're more likely to fantasize as opposed to being able to do what they want if they actually want to go out and get it. You know?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that
it's making some sense, but at the same time, I see a problem with that.
Yeah, I do.
Because some men will prefer to dream about their fetish instead of trying to meet women, and which makes no sense too.
Well, but then we talk about a social situation. You
yeah.
know, there's all kinds of other factors. It's not just one thing that
no,
makes
right.
up our sexuality. It's many things.
That's true.
So this text writes, to say you quote what you said, Pierre, you have to control your fetish is a contradiction in terms, given your fetish drives and controls you instead and not the other way around. Hence, your reactive attraction towards it. Otherwise, one could simply dissolve their fetish altogether if it were so controllable. But that's not what we're saying. A fetish doesn't have to drive you. You can drive it. In other words, you can have a, you know, maybe that's the difference between having a preference. So a fetish that is something that's more of a preference rather than something that becomes some kind of compulsion that you feel you have no control over. It's about feeling the lack of control that causes the distress.
Well said. Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right. I usually give this example. I love to eat pizza, but I don't have pizza every meal.
Right.
Because...
Or if you look at someone with substance abuse, if you look at like someone who has a drink once in a while or an alcoholic.
Right.
It's
one has control over it and you can control it.
Exactly.
And I think that's a good example.
I don't think you can just wish them away.
No, you cannot.
My kink is just wired in me. That's mm-hmm. what does it for me. And however, I can control it by choosing how I practice it or don't practice it.
That's right. And that's the key is even if somebody with a fetish goes for treatment for therapy because they want to eliminate it, you actually can't truly eliminate it. You can control it or you know use it in a healthy, appropriate, more healthy way so it doesn't take exactly. over your sexuality. But eliminating it is maybe very, very difficult to do.
Again, like Catherine says, to be wired accordingly, like in your brain.
Well, for some people, yes. Yeah. Now, this person stretches this a little bit, says, I guess if somebody is suicidal and consenting, you have no problem with them going by BDSM. I'm not sure what they mean by that. And is there nothing disturbing about a person who has the lack of empathy or sympathy to inflict suffering on another being for their own enjoyment? You're missing the point. You're missing the point. This is about a consensual relationship. This is not about lack of empathy or sympathy or inflicting pain on somebody who is unwilling.
This is making love and rape.
Well, exactly.
And non-consensual rape. You could say, why would a woman want that inflicted upon her? And then, maybe she's liking it and it's great and they're having sex.
I think the person's missing the point in that these relationships are consensual on both ends. So when you're talking about the sexual sadist who has victims, that is a sick person who is probably a psychopath also. And that's a very, very, very different situation than what we're talking about here. They go on to say, and why would you trust somebody like this to stop when asked? Sounds like the height of psychotic narcissism to me. Please don't call me judgmental. Courts of law judge people who hurt. Not these people. That's not the way it works.
Well, I know I don't do anything illegal. It is with consenting adults who, you know what? And we're not talking about killing somebody here. We're talking about, you know, a spanking. We're talking night and day.
And they're going a little further saying just because somebody consents, is there no problem with beating them up? You're not beating them up. That's another, you know.
Well, that's another misconception.
It's another misconception. So your texts is full of misconceptions about BDSM.
But even if nowadays there's a lot of people who understand more what BDSM is all about, we still have the few people who, don't understand it.
This is a very good example.
Yeah, that's a very nice example.
Yeah. I want to just share a little bit of the study. There was a big sample of people, of over 900 men and women who were practitioners of BDSM compared to another group of people who were non-practitioners of BDSM. They looked at, they filled out all the same questionnaires, aspects of their personality, level of attachment, insecurity, level of personal well-being. And what they found is that the BDSM group were more extroverted. So they tended to be more self-confident, more sociable. They had more emotional stability, but they were less agreeable. In other words, they were less friendly and less compassionate relative to the non-BDSM group. The differences were not huge, but even though the difference might have been small, they were significant, but small. It still shows you that the BDSM group were not psychologically unhealthy, is what it really showed you, because it compared them to a non-BDSM group.
I know as a BDSM adept, if I'm going to play with someone, I want them to be to understand what they're feeling. I want them to control what they're feeling. I will not play with somebody who cannot control their feeling because I'm afraid that something bad is going to happen. And I think most people are like me, being either submissive or dominant. You need to know what you're doing. You need to understand what you're feeling.
And in these situations, we must understand that neither role of submissive or dominant is inherently pathological. Whereas people hear it, they only hear one thing. Oh, they see pathology, or that's what they judge it on, without looking at the entire context in which all of this happens.
A lot of people, a lot, I'd say the majority of people are submissive or dominant at some relationships in their life.
Right.
You're either, you know, you could be the authority figure. It doesn't, and I'm not talking sexuality here even.
Right.
There's always going to be a power exchange of with your friends. One friend will be always, you know, where do you want to go? Oh, and they always pick. And you're fine to go along with that. Well, that's really being submissive.
Or somebody who really wants to be seduced, you know, yes, or wants absolutely. The other person to take control in the bedroom.
Sure.
Or it doesn't, well, you know, again, there may be a little bit of relenting or giving up some of that.
Now you're falling into the exchange of power.
Well, right. And which can also be considered part of BDSM. We'll continue this and talk about maybe what's dangerous about BDSM. More questions about fetishes or comments about that. So foot fetish in particular, we'll talk about that. And anything else you want to discuss at 514-800 that has to do with alternative sexuality.
Straight talk that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
We're talking alternative sexuality tonight on the program. So a couple of texts. This texter says, but isn't that the entire distinction between a fetish and a preference, namely that the former is a fixation and thus an uncontrollable attraction, whereas the latter is merely a question of taste and is therefore comparatively controllable instead? You're right on the one hand. Now, the thing is, things have changed a little bit in the way we use the terminology.
True.
So that's part of the problem we may be having and understanding all of this. At one time, a fetish was also called / a perversion. We don't call it that anymore. We call it that when it is something that is that causes a distress. Like, again, those are the factors that have to play into it, you know, that causes distress, that is done illegally. Like, I knew a foot fetishist that would or other underwear fetishists that would steal, to, you know, that they could be thrown in jail for what they were doing. So in and of itself, the fetish wasn't a problem, but the behaviors attached to the fetish are a problem.
But just to show you, I claim to have fetishes, but I claim at the same time that I'm controlling them.
Right.
So
would they be a preference over a fetish? See, that's where we have difficulty. So in therapy, we try to turn something that seems uncontrollable into more of a preference, and so that we integrate other forms of sexuality into a person's life as well.
So we should change our vocabulary there.
Yeah, well, it's difficult because the
it does change.
The vocabulary is changing over time as our understanding changes, and as we start to appropriate things in our everyday language, right? There's a lot of things now that are in our everyday kind of everyday experience or language or the media or exposure or film and books and all of this stuff. So it does change the way we even pathologize certain things. So even in the field of medicine and psychiatry and all of that, it's a forever changing in many ways. There was a time when, you know, not such a long time ago, where homosexuality was considered a disorder.
Illegal.
And it isn't. Well, yes, but let's just say the disordered part of it, right?
Yes.
So we're seeing the same thing with, you know, BDSM, fetishes, and things like that. It's very specific. Like, there have to be very specific conditions where something is psychologically unhealthy. So clearly, if something is so uncontrollable that it dominates your life and you have a hard time having relationships and you cannot have a regular relationship with somebody, then that poses a problem to you.
Yeah.
And that becomes psychologically unhealthy. So I hope that's kind of clear. I don't know if...
Well, it is. It's just, it means that people like me, we need to learn the new vocabulary. And I should talk about my preference instead of talking about my conditions.
You also have to... What's really important is having a partner that is a match for you.
Yes.
If you have a fetish that you're a cross-dresser, you're going to... you know, I think that you could still have a fetish for that if you meet the right woman who thinks that's sexy too,
or who says it's okay. Like I'm okay with it. You know, I know you have sex with me, but you occasionally want to dress this way, or sometimes it's okay to wear nylons to bed or whatever it is. But exactly, you need to have that synchrony with your partner. If it's something you keep hidden that then you feel shame about and you feel guilt about it, then it becomes psychologically unhealthy to you. This texter writes, and actually it fits a little bit with what you're saying, Catherine. I dated someone who had a foot fetish, and he would always tell me he didn't like my feet. How do you handle that? So that, I find that interesting. You know, usually a foot fetishist will look at a person's feet before they date them or get serious, at least the ones I've known. And if the feet aren't to their liking somehow, or they are a real turnoff to them, they won't go out with them.
Yes, I. It'd be interesting to know what they didn't like about the feet. Was it, you know, because in a case like that, maybe it's, you know, you just need to have some red toenail polish. You never know.
Right. It could be something that they could do to their feet.
But
maybe.
It would be interesting to know what he specifically wanted in a feet. I mean,
know.
Maybe it
Bunions.
Was Asian feet.
Bunions.
For instance. Or a black foot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or whatever. Or a size 5. You know, he might have a very specific foot fetish. And it might have been that you had lovely feet.
So asking your partner what is it about the feet that you don't like might be something.
What
or what
like?
About if I wore heels, or what about, you know, maybe that would help. And this one, this text is interesting because it's about cuckolding. My husband likes being told that he has a small penis and also has a foot fetish. Is this a normal fetish? So it's a common enough fetish. So the foot fetish is the most common fetish. What you're talking about is humiliation.
Humiliation?
So he likes to be humiliated, and there's something arousing about that. There is a word for it, cuckolding. I mean, that's part of it. It's being, I mean, that's,
yes.
You know, sometimes it involves another person, but
yes.
Not always,
in
right?
In kind of the BDSM term, that is very different than that, though.
Okay.
For cuckolding. Just,
okay.
Just
saying. It involves yep. humiliating in front of another person.
Or comparing to another
person.
Or knowing that the other partner normally has many other partners. Called a bull. There's a whole fetish around
okay,
that.
Okay, so that's
it's
a whole
usually
other thing.
A little different.
That's... So this is part of humiliation,
yes.
And this is what your partner may be attracted to or aroused by. Again, does it have to happen every time? How does it make you feel? Does it make you feel uncomfortable? Like, these are the things that have to be addressed to see how the two of you can function sexually in a healthy way. Anyway, interesting, really interesting text tonight. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. We
really covered a lot of ground. Thank you so much for being here. If you want to get in touch with Pierre and Catherine, bdsmcircle.com. I want to thank you all for your time. I want to thank you for your texts. I want to thank Dave Simon in Master Control. If you want to connect with me, drlaurie.com. That's my website, the fastest way to reach me. Coming up next on CJD, it is The Comedy Show with your host, Joey Elias. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night. Meantime, have a great rest of the evening, and remember to live your life with passion. The way you dance, the sexy girl.